This is Classical IPR, a service of Interlochen Center for the Arts.
I'm Amanda Sewell, and you're listening to Classical IPR, Interlochen Public Radio. My guest is Rob Dillon, a member and the development director of Third Coast Percussion. Rob, welcome to Classical IPR.
Thanks so much. It's great to be here.
And you're going to be spending this hour with us, talking to us about some pieces that have been important to you in your development as a musician. First, tell us a little bit about Third Coast Percussion.
Yeah, definitely. So Third Coast Percussion is a quartet of classically trained percussionists. We all came up through that classical music tradition. We met while studying music together at Northwestern University. And loved playing percussion ensemble music. It was part of the curriculum there and an important thing to us. And we felt like we wanted to start a group that could bring this to a wider audience outside of the academic world. There are not a lot of professional percussion ensembles. So we've been around for about 12 years, and we tour around the country performing concerts. We do a season of concerts in Chicago every year. And we're ensemble in residence at the University of Notre Dame at their DeBartolo Performing Arts Center. So we keep a busy schedule. We do a lot of educational work as well and perform all sorts of different music for percussion instruments.
And you travel and do master classes with students, which is why you're here at Interlochen right now. We'll hear a little more about that later in the hour. Tell us about some of the different instruments that you play in the ensemble.
One of the things that is so fun and exciting and also eternally challenging about being a percussionist is there is an infinite wealth of different instruments that we play on. Whereas, you know, generally a violinist has one instrument that they play, or a trumpet player has one instrument, a percussionist can be called on to play just about anything. We like to say that anything that is not already somebody else's job is a percussion instrument. So this includes everything from things people often think about when they think of percussion, like drums, cymbals, and shakers, things like that, as well as pitched percussion instruments, keyboard instruments like the marimba, xylophone, vibraphone, but also found objects that make interesting sounds. We play pieces on flower pots and teacups and ceramic tiles, and sometimes we even build our own instruments, which can be an exciting challenge as well.
And when you travel, do you take those instruments with you, or do you borrow them when you get there?
Yeah, as you can imagine, being a percussion quartet comes with a lot of logistical challenges. So every tour, and we spend somewhere in the neighborhood of 150 days on the road each year, every different place we go, we have to come up with a different solution of how the instruments are going to be there for us to do our concerts. So a lot of times that involves us driving a van or a truck full of instruments across the country to play concerts. Sometimes it involves us flying across the country or internationally, in which case we check a bunch of suitcases that each weigh 49.5 pounds as to not go over, and then you know, bring a lot of the small, very unique instruments with us, but find places to either borrow or rent instruments on site. So universities often will have drums or marimbas that we can borrow. We find other solutions, but it's every single concert we play, someone had to sit down and think about where those instruments are going to come from for that show.
I can only imagine what the TSA agents think when they go through your luggage at the airport.
Yeah, I think we've heard a lot of more cowbell jokes in our time.
Once
you're carrying on 8 cowbells in your personal carry-on, you're asking for it, but...
Okay. Well, Rob Dillon, you have brought along a fascinating playlist to share with us today. Where should we start?
Yeah, well, I thought it might be fun to sort of trace my own evolution, I guess, as a musician from when I was in high school and first discovering classical music through all sorts of the strange music that I play now as a full-time percussion quartet member. So maybe we can start with some orchestral music. When I was... In high school, I joined the local youth symphony. I grew up in the Metro Detroit area in West Bloomfield and played the Metropolitan Youth Symphony. And a friend of mine, who's actually later came up to study here at Interlochen, was a French horn player, asked me to join the local youth orchestra. He said I should audition because they needed percussionists. And I sort of, you know, I liked playing in school band and all this stuff, but had never really ventured into the orchestral world. And joined the youth orchestra and had just an amazing experience and discovered all sorts of really great and powerful music that way. So one of the things that stuck with me, one of the pieces that was programmed in my first year in the youth orchestra was Tchaikovsky's Sixth Symphony. And it's so intense and so powerful, just an incredibly expressive piece of music. And it was something that I just think I hadn't had an experience like that before. I'd always enjoyed playing you know, playing music in all sorts of different settings, but this was a different type of expressive experience that sort of, I don't know, really got to my heart and gave me goosebumps, and I think helped to sort of launch my passion for music and maybe my decision about trying to become a professional musician.
Well, let's listen to the fourth and final movement of that symphony, the Symphony No. 6, the Pathetique of Peter Ilyich Tchaikovsky, music chosen for us by our guest Rob Dillon. Here it is, performed by the Arctic Philharmonic, conducted by Christian Lindberg.
Thank you.
The fourth and final movement of the Symphony No. 6 by Peter Ilyich Tchaikovsky, performed there by the Arctic Philharmonic, conducted by Christian Lindberg. Music selected by our guest this hour, Rob Dillon, a member of Third Coast Percussion. Rob, thanks for that one.
Yeah.
So how do you end up playing in a percussion ensemble?
Yeah, so I went to college to study music, to be a music major, and I did my undergraduate at Northwestern University, and started to become familiar with the idea of a percussion ensemble through my university experiences. I think I, you know, was aware of the concept before that and had done a very small amount of it in high school, but it was something that was really a serious part of the curriculum at Northwestern. And, you know, as percussionists, relative to the whole history of classical music, we're a pretty young genre, this idea of music for just percussionists. But there are a couple of composers who've really dug into this and created whole musical styles where I think this is a really essential quality of it. And one of those composers who I first learned about early in my days at college is Steve Reich, American composer who just celebrated his 80th birthday, I think, last year. And I think probably the first Steve Reich piece that I ever heard when I went to college was a short marimba duo called Nagoya Marimbas. And it's a beautiful, fun little piece. It's got an incredible groove to it and very melodic, but it has the Steve Reich quality of everything is a canon. So it's these two players always playing exactly the same music, but just slightly offset from each other. It's a little bit like when people sing Row, Row, Row Your Boat in a round, but very close together and much more complicated. And some of Steve's pieces take this idea and spin it out into like an hour-long piece of music, which can become this incredible kind of meditative experience that washes over you for a really long period of time. But Nagoya Marimbas is one that's sort of a bite-sized nugget of this kind of musical quality and something which I think has become a little bit of a greatest hit for percussionists around the world.
Well, let's listen to Third Coast Percussion's performance of Steve Reich's Nagoya Marimbas. Thank you. We heard Third Coast Percussion performing Nagoya Marimbas by Steve Reich. And one person we heard in that performance was Rob Dillon, a member of Third Coast Percussion. And Rob, that's not just any recording. That's a Grammy-winning recording that we just heard. You folks won a Grammy for your album of Steve Reich music.
Yeah.
Just in this last year.
Yeah, it's very exciting. Yeah, it's just about a year ago now that happened. And it was the first time we'd ever been nominated. And I think it's the first time that a percussion ensemble has ever won in a chamber music category. But it was something that was very exciting and super meaningful for us. I mean, we've been playing Steve Reich's music since our group started in 2005. It's always been a really important part of our repertoire. And this is music that I think we're part of a generation of percussionists who actually learned this music, didn't necessarily learn this music directly from the composer or directly from people who played with the composer. This is music that Steve developed with his own ensemble for the most part. And the idea that now this is starting to become kind of standard repertoire in a way that percussionists study when they're in college, and other musicians also study Steve's music, but it's especially important to us percussionists. It felt really meaningful for us then when we finally recorded sort of our take on this music that it met with such success. But I think we owe a lot of that honor to all the percussion ensembles before us who've helped to make this genre into something, and all the folks who working directly with Steve developed this music and started championing this music decades ago.
Okay, so here is a really important question. When an ensemble wins one Grammy, do you get custody of it? Like, do you take turns? How does that work?
Right. So it's not like the Stanley Cup where we have to, like, pass it around. No one gets a turn. We each – so the funny thing, at the ceremony, you go up on stage and you accept your award. They hand you a Grammy, and you give your speech, and then you walk off stage, and there's a team of people wearing white gloves who take the Grammy back from you, and they polish it up again, and they've got a couple of Grammys. This is behind the curtain. I hope it's okay that I'm talking about this. But then later
– True Secrets of the Grammys with
Rob
Dillon.
On, they send you your Grammy in the mail, and each of us received a statue, which is very nice. It's engraved with information about the about the album and about the award. So that's it's exciting. It was a great thing to be able to, for each of us to keep on our bookshelves or mantles at home or whatever. But they each came in a little box with very intensive padding and a nice, perfectly cut out piece of foam where the cutout is in the shape of a Grammy nestled around.
Wait,
the
so
statue.
You're telling me this photo of you at the Grammys, you're holding it. That's just a dummy Grammy.
I think it's just as real as the other ones, but it's not the one we get to take home. So there's a little bit of show business and razzle dazzle there for all of us too.
Wow. So I learned something new today. Thanks for that. And speaking of Steve Reich, we should mention that you're going to be back here in April at Interlochen with your fellows from Third Coast as part of the Steve Reich Festival that's going to take place here at Interlochen.
Yeah, we're so incredibly excited. So we'll be performing Steve's seminal piece, Music for 18 Musicians. So it's going to be a whole team of folks. It'll be the four of us from Third Coast Percussion, as well as another amazing Chicago-based ensemble called Eighth Blackbird that have been longtime friends and mentors of ours. They've been always wonderful to work with, and we're glad to be able to join forces with them and a whole team of other really great musicians, mostly from Chicago. So we'll be performing that piece, and I believe we're also performing Sextet, which is a really another great Steve Reich piece that involves four percussionists plus two folks who play piano and keyboards. So we've got a couple members of 8th Blackbird who are going to be playing with the four of us on that piece as well. So these are two like amazing pieces. They're much larger scale pieces than Nagoya Marimbas, the piece that we heard a couple minutes ago. But these were also pieces that I was first exposed to, you know, at some point during my undergrad education, and they just totally blew my mind. And it took me to a different place musically. It showed me something that music could be that I didn't know it could be.
Well, we will keep our listeners posted on more details about that performance coming up in April. Let's go to the next piece you've chosen for us today by the American. Do we call him an iconoclast? Does he even get?
I think that's
John Cage, whatever we call him.
Yeah. So John Cage is also on that the list of composers who are so important for percussion, especially. He wrote tons and tons of music for percussion and actually composed some of the earliest works in our sort of classical tradition for just percussion instruments. So the piece we're going to hear in a minute, Third Construction, reaches all the way back to 1941, which is contemporary by classical music standards, but ancient by percussion ensemble standards. And, you know, John Cage is probably best known for his famous or infamous silent piece, 4 minutes and 33 seconds, which is just 4.5 minutes of silence where the audience sits and listens to the sounds in the room. And this is a very philosophical and conceptual piece. But before, maybe 15 years or so before he was writing that, he was messing around with percussion instruments. And there's maybe a common thread there that Cage was fascinated with the idea that there are all sorts of amazing and interesting sounds around us every day. And in the right context and the right setting, these things can become music for us. And he structured these sounds a lot more in these early percussion pieces. So Third Construction, it also the series of three percussion pieces called Constructions. They're all notated in a very traditional way, but they use a lot of non-traditional instruments. So Cage is pulling, you know, percussion instruments that you might think of when you think of percussion and very typical things you're used to hearing in a concert, like tom-toms and cowbells, a cymbal, things like that, various kinds of shakers. But he's also pulling all sorts of different musical instruments that come from different places around the world. And so there's a log drum, which is a instrument traditionally comes from, I think, Mexico and Native American cultures, as well as just African versions of that instrument too. There's something called a quijada, which is a traditional Mexican instrument made from the jawbone of a donkey. The more modern, vegan-friendly version of that is called a vibraslap, something you will even hear in pop music sometimes. And there's a conch shell in here, which is people often ask us if that's actually a percussion instrument because it involves buzzing your lips and blowing into it in the way you would a brass instrument. But again, if no one else is going to do it, then it's a percussion instrument. So it's a really prominent and fun conch shell part that really pops out of this piece. And I think contrary to what people often think about a lot of John Cage's music, about it being very sort of spacious and conceptual and atmospheric, this piece is like really fun. It's driving. It's exciting. It's rhythmically complex and just has this like incredible level of intensity to it. We've probably performed this is a piece maybe I first studied in college. I think all of us in the group played this piece maybe once in our university percussion ensemble days. But then it became a part of Third Coast Percussion's repertoire very early on. And we've probably performed this piece like 400 times now for all sorts of different audiences, in concert series where they've never heard a percussion ensemble before, kids concerts where we're playing for groups of students who may or may not have any musical experience. And in every case, this piece always brings people to their feet. It's super exciting, and there's all sorts of amazing sounds in it.
We're going to listen to Third Coast Percussion's performance of John Cage's Third Construction, about the last 3 minutes or so. Yeah. What are you playing in the last 3 minutes?
Ooh, so I think I start off by playing tin cans. Each of us has five tin cans in this piece, and we each got to pick our own special tin cans that we like the sound of. So mine are actually spaghetti strainers from IKEA, but I thought that was close enough to, to tin cans. They have a nice sound. And yeah, so I'm playing some tin cans, and then I play cowbells. I've got a couple of cowbells and then some drums get me through the piece. There's also an instrument called a lion's roar I play a couple times. This is a really fun instrument that its history, I think, started as like a Foley instrument. It was a sound effect they would use because it was much safer than actually bringing a live lion into the radio studio.
I guess they did that exactly once.
so it's just a big drum with a string or a stick through the head, and when you pull a wet rag along that string or the stick, it creates this kind of groaning sound that sounds like a lion's roar. So it adds this sort of deep resonant sound into the sound of the rest of the percussion ensemble.
All right, well, here's Rob Dillon and his colleagues from Third Coast Percussion performing John Cage's Third Construction. The last section of Third Construction by John Cage, featuring a lion's roar and spaghetti strainers and all kinds of interesting instruments performed by Third Coast Percussion, including Rob Dillon, who's with us today here at Classical IPR. And Rob, you've picked another interesting piece for us next. But this is a violin concerto. Where's the percussion?
Yeah, there is some percussion on this piece. There's actually a couple of really great percussion parts, but it's sort of a chamber orchestra piece with all sorts of instruments, but a very prominently featured and incredibly virtuosic violin part. This is Gyorgy Ligeti's violin concerto. And this is a piece I was maybe vaguely familiar with Ligeti's music. He's, I think, you know, found a little bit of pop culture recognition because Stanley Kubrick used some of his music in a couple of his films at very eerie and creepy moments. And a lot of Ligeti's music has this kind of eerie and occasionally terrifying sense to it. But it's amazing, powerful stuff. When I was in graduate school, one of the contemporary music groups at New England Conservatory, where I was getting my master's, sort of an ad hoc project on our own time, and a conductor and a violinist put together a really great group of performers to play this violin concerto, which is all the parts are incredibly difficult. And these folks asked me to participate in this, and I thought, I don't really know this piece, and I don't know the composer so much, but it seems like a great group of people, and I'll give it a shot. And I remember listening to a recording for the first time, and then going to the first rehearsal and thinking, I have no idea what's going on in this piece. There's so much going on. It's very dense. But over the next couple of months as we were putting this together and I kept listening to the recording, things just started to fall into place for me in terms of my understanding of the music. And also, of course, as we rehearsed it, things came together and it all started to make sense. It's delicate music that really everything needs to be really as close to perfect as it can be. I think he writes parts of the music that are right on the edge of impossible. But to make it all work, there's just such thorough rehearsal and practice that has to happen. But the music, the result is it's really incredibly powerful. And I think, you know, hearkening back to what first drew me to the classical music tradition when I was a high schooler, Tchaikovsky's music, and it's so emotional and it really, I think, gets to your heart, gets to your emotions. Ligeti's music does this too, but he's maybe just scratching a little bit of a different itch. It's dramatic and intense music, and it maybe gets to a place of confusion or fear sometimes, but also these moments of incredible beauty. And I think in a way, composers like Ligeti are just stretching out the expressive range of what music can do. But it's at the end of the day, for me, I feel like it's not so different from listening to Tchaikovsky or Beethoven or Bartok, things like that. So this is a piece that I think sort of taught me that, you know, just maybe keep listening. Give it a couple more listens and see what starts to make sense. And you may discover like an expressive experience that you could never have otherwise.
So we're going to listen to the first movement of the Ligeti Violin Concerto. And as you said, the first time you heard it, you didn't quite know how to respond. Is there anything you can offer our listeners who might be hearing this for the first time to help them kind of ground themselves before they hear it?
Sure, yeah. I think there's an incredible thing that Ligeti does where he sets up different sort of groups of musicians entering in, maybe one at a time or as the intensity builds. And each of them are maybe sometimes playing in their own speed. And it all sort of relates to the rhythm of the way it's really notated. But as new voices come in, they're each playing their own melody at their own rate. So you can sort of follow one line within that and see what's going on when a new voice comes in. You can follow that, but the old voice will still be going at its own speed. And the effect of that, I think, creates this really great level of tension that eventually sort of resolves at climactic moments. So I think you can think of this movement as primarily one big build. It starts very quiet with these delicate violin figures and then just grows and grows in intensity until the whole orchestra is in.
So it's almost like a cocktail party where people are arriving and different conversation groups are starting, and then all of a sudden it's just a lively room.
Yeah, full exactly. And it becomes complete cacophony, but every part of the cacophony has its own little sense to it.
Great. Well, here's the first movement, Georges Ligeti's Violin Concerto, the Danish National Radio Symphony Orchestra performing here, featuring violinist Christina Astrand and conducted by Thomas Dausgaard.
Thank you.
The first movement of Georges Ligeti's violin concerto. We heard violinist Christina Astrand with the Danish National Radio Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Thomas Dasgaard. Music selected for us by our guest Rob Dillon, member of Third Coast Percussion. And Rob, our next piece is pretty postmodern as well.
It is, yeah.
It's kind of actually the textbook postmodern. I mean, if you read about postmodernism in a music textbook, this
usually
piece
talking about this piece
is usually the case study.
Yeah, and that was definitely my first exposure to it, was through like a music history course, and talking about more recent developments and different musical ideas people were experimenting with, and contemporary music in the classical world has gone in lots of different directions. You can look at different movements within the way that this tradition has evolved, and I think this sort of idea of a musical collage, this is, like you say, this is like a textbook example of it, the way that it all comes together. So this is Luciano Berio's Sinfonia, and the third movement of it is, I think all of the musical content is quotations from other musical pieces. So he's got a scherzo from Mahler's Second Symphony that is the background for the whole movement, and that's sort of running throughout. And Mahler was one of those composers whose music had also really resonated with me when I'd first been exposed to it in high school youth orchestra. And so that was a familiar thing. But then other bits of music, little fragments, pop out along the way. And over top of all these different quotes of, Ravel and Debussy all being thrown out over this running Mahler scherzo, there's also, I think, eight vocalists who are singing and speaking all of this different text. And the final result is something which you hear little bits of it that are familiar. And I think it creates a lot of questions for a lot of people about, like, what does it mean to compose a piece if you're just, if you're quoting all of these things. But I think the composite here is something that is very unique, that does something that none of those independent, those previous existing pieces of music would do. And the text, I think, adds this extra layer. It feels almost like people are talking through an orchestra concert. but they're saying some very interesting things. And as it gets more and more intense in the moment, both in the text and in the various music that's being used there, sort of climactic moment, there's this moment that where the speakers are sort of reflecting on, like, what does it mean to be an artist? Why are we... why do people dedicate their life to music, and what purpose does it serve, and does it make life better? So it's very, very big and heavy questions that and the way that coalesces with the music is something that I found really, really powerful.
It's a very evocative piece. Let's listen to an excerpt from the third movement of Luciano Berio's Sinfonia. This was one of the first recordings made of this piece. Berio himself is conducting the New York Philharmonic, and the voices are provided by the Swingle Singers.
Yeah, this is the recording I would have first heard, I think, when I first found this piece.
If only this voice would stop for a second, it would seem long to me, a second of silence. I would listen. I'd know that it was going to start again. It's late now, and we are still talking incessantly, any old thing, repetition after repetition, talking unceasingly in yourself, outside yourself. It's late now, she'll never hear again the lowing cabin, the rush of the stream. In a chamber, dimensions unknown, I do not move and never shall again, on long road or short. The fact is, I trouble no one, but I did. And after each group disintegration, the name of Mayakovsky hangs in the clean air. Ourselves face to face, and they remind us that all this can't stop the wars, can't make the young or lower the price of bread.
Say it again, louder!
Can't stop the wars, can't make the old younger or lower the price of bread, can't ease solitude and dull the tread outside the door. We can only nod, yes, it's true, but we need to remind, to point. All is with us, always, except perhaps at certain moments, here among these rows of balconies, in a crowd or out of crowd, perhaps waiting to enter, watching. And tomorrow we'll read that Beethoven's fourth concerto made tulips grow in my garden and altered the flow of the ocean currents. We must believe it's true. There must be something else, otherwise it would be quite hopeless. But it is quite hopeless, unquestioned. But it can't go on. It saith, not knowing what. It's getting late. Where now? When now? I have a present for you. Keep going, page after page. Keep going, going on. Call that going, call that on. But wait. He is barely moving now, almost still. Should I make my introductions? Christiane Legrand, first soprano. Janet Beaucoumont, second soprano. Claudine Meunier, first contralto. Hélène Levaux, second contralto. Joseph Noves, first tenor. Paul Swinkle, second tenor. José Germain, first bass. Jean Cusack, second bass. But now it's done. It's over. We've had our chance. There was even, for a second, hope of resurrection, almost. Mein junges Leben hat ein Ende. We must collect our thoughts, for the unexpected is always upon us, in our rooms, in the street, at the door, on a stage.
Luciano Berio conducting the New York Philharmonic and the Swingle Singers in music he composed. We heard an excerpt of the third movement of Symphonia, music chosen for us at Classical IPR by our guest, Rob Dillon, who is a member of Third Coast Percussion. Stop by the IPR studio to hang out with us today. And you're also the development director.
I am, yeah. So Third Coast Percussion is an artist-run ensemble. We're very fortunate that in the last couple of years, we've got a couple of fantastic staff members who are working with us to help us with all of the various challenges that go with running your own music organization, especially percussion ensemble. But for many years, for about the first 10 years that Third Coast was in existence, it was just the four musicians dealing with all of the day-to-day operations of the organization. And so that involves obviously dealing with all those logistical challenges, figuring out what instruments need to be where in order for us to rehearse and play concerts, but also dealing with booking gigs, finding opportunities to perform, and balancing our books and making sure there's money in the bank and that we're paying our taxes and everyone's getting their paychecks. And Third Coast Percussion is a not-for-profit organization. And so some of the resources that help us to continue to do what we do come from foundations that support the arts and music in particular, as well as generous individuals who believe in contemporary music and in the power of art, and who support us financially. And so the grant writing and fundraising aspects of the group fall under my purview as the development director.
And it's amazing you guys have grown enough that now you have people.
We have people. It is the most amazing thing after spending 10 years doing it all ourselves, and things have continued to get busier. But we have a wonderful full-time managing director and a couple of part-time folks who work with us dealing with logistical needs and just day-to-day operations in our studio and office in Chicago. And that is really helping us all towards our goal of being able to focus as much of our energy, the four of us in the ensemble, focus that energy on the artistic challenges and all the work that we do as a percussion ensemble.
Well, speaking of artistic challenges, that seems like the right way to talk about this last piece you've picked for us today.
Yeah, so another one of these formative experiences in my own education coming up after I'd, come from loving orchestral music to discovering sort of the minimalist music of Steve Reich and the sound experiments of John Cage and various other composers who've written a lot of interesting music in the last 75 years. I participated in an academy program in Switzerland, in Lucerne, Switzerland. That was part of the Lucerne Festival, but it was the Lucerne Festival Academy, and it was a whole academy program dedicated to contemporary music, to modern classical music. And it was founded and run initially by Pierre Boulez, the amazing French composer and conductor and champion of new music. And so my first experience going to Lucerne, Switzerland, and playing with these amazing other musicians from all around the world who were excited about playing really challenging, new, complex music. The first summer, I performed a couple of pieces from this collection of pieces by a great French composer named Philippe Manoury. And I was not really familiar with Manoury's music before, and got this music in the mail and saw how many notes there were on the page and how complicated it was. It was a little bit challenging to decipher just the way it was notated. And again, had one of those moments where I listened to a recording and said, okay, I think I kind of understand what's going on here, but this is going to take some time. And through the process of learning the piece and listening to the recordings more, and then working together with my colleague who I performed with in Europe the first year, a great German percussionist named Johannes Fischer, learning this piece and putting it together with some coaching from great French percussionist there. Learn to appreciate what an amazing piece of music this is. And it's this really cool sort of coordinated dance or almost conversation between two marimbas with very gestural figures that sort of play off of one another. And one person will pass something to the other player and things will pass back and forth. It's very fragmented at first. And then things start to sort of coalesce and you get longer musical ideas that come together. And eventually it arrives at this place where things are really in a solid groove and a longer passage where things get really exciting. So this is part of a whole collection of pieces that then Third Coast Percussion went on to play years later that includes all kinds of different music for keyboard percussion instruments. And that includes marimbas and vibraphones, but also, maybe stretching the definition a little bit, there are some pitched tai gongs and these really amazing giant metal instruments you have to build yourself, which are called sixen, which are made out of different lengths of aluminum U-channel, these construction materials. And they have this amazing otherworldly sound that is a completely wild and different thing. So, but this is a piece that we recorded and put out on an album in 2017. And it's, again, it's something that's just so unique, and I can't imagine how a piece of music would accomplish the same expressive goals without doing the things that this piece does.
Well, we're going to hear part of the second movement from the Book of Keyboards, the marimba duo that you were talking about. And this is you with David Skidmore playing the duet. Anything in particular we should listen for here?
Yeah, I think it's just sort of trying to hear that sort of dance between the two players and the way that one a gesture passes from one to the other and things get chaotic but maybe line up in very specific spots. And then the little fragments start to join together into longer and longer musical phrases.
We heard movement 2 from The Book of Keyboards, music of Philippe Mallory, performed by Rob Dillon and David Skidmore of Third Coast Percussion. Rob Dillon, thank you so much for joining us today here at Classical IPR.
Pleasure.
I learned a lot. And you'll be back here in April with your colleagues from Third Coast Percussion, along with the musicians of Eighth Blackbird, as part of the Steve Reich Festival. We look forward to hearing you perform then.
Yeah, can't wait.
Well, thanks again. Thanks so much for being here with us today here at Classical IPR.
Yeah, thanks. It's been great chatting with you.